Accession number 26864, Reel 1.
Arthur Caney, Reel 1. Can you tell me, first of all, where you were born?
I was born in Whitley, in near Melksham, Wiltshire.
And what did your father do?
I don't know. I was young and he was killed in 1918. I was born in 1915. I didn't meet him.
No, sorry.
And I did. My mother never talked about my father, twice only in my lifetime. For some reason, that was the way people were.
But he was in the army, so you knew.
Well, he joined the Royal Wiltshire Yeomanry, and at a time during the war, of course, they were all killed, or at least 6 officers and 26 were left of the Royal Wiltshire Yeomanry. And he then was transferred to the Wiltshire Regiment from the Wiltshire Regiment. And of that battalion, which I think was the 5th Battalion, many more were lost again. So that what was left, the remnants, were passed to the 2nd of Wiltshire's, who took part in the last battle in 1918 and ran the Champagne country, ran Reims and that area. And I went recently, when I got older, I got ashamed of not following up where my father was. So I wrote to the War Graves Commission, found out where he was buried. But when I got there, I found he was not buried. There's in a place called Soussance, there are 379 names of unknown graves, people who had no unknown graves. I thought of that battle then. It was a battle of about 5 days in which there are only, well, those 3,000, whatever it was, didn't have a grave. So imagine the others who were killed who have graves there. So I got a photograph there of my standing, put it in, and I was a bit proud of that in the end, after all these years, because I'd passed through that country many times, peace and war. And I, because of the way we were brought up, not to talk about that sort of thing, or some or other, we didn't talk about it. When I was older, I got ashamed about it.
But you went to school in Wiltshire, did you?
I went to school in a place called Atworth, which is a small village close to where I lived.
Right.
I lived between two villages. So I went to school in Atworth, and 2.5 miles, and we used to come home from school each lunchtime, and I ran backwards and forwards all those years, and that's why later in the army I became a reasonable runner, long distance runner.
And did you stay at that school until you left school?
Yeah, I stayed there, yes. Mm-hmm. It was a very, looking back, we had one headmaster and one teacher, and looking back I think they must have been wonderful to bring us through the different stages. We got to the stage when I was 13, when there was nothing more to do, and I wasted 12 months, really, with nothing much to do, picking apples and things like that, in the school time. And I remember, things were a bit short, my mother brought us up, so I wanted to get a job quickly. First of all, she said to me, "Do you want to go to the secondary school?" So I said no, because my brother had already been to there, and he was still there, and he was learning only, well, I thought he was not learning too much, a little bit of French, cost a fortune for us in those days for school clothes, so I thought it would be wrong for me to go to school.
How many siblings did you have?
I had one brother.
Right.
My mother brought us both up. We were fed well, clothed well, and I looked back, and yes, she did well, yes.
So what did you decide you were going to do? Did you have a choice?
Well, it was strange. I knew that I was wasting my time at school the last time. So I saw the advertisement in the paper for a clerk in the place. I thought I could do that. So I got this job at 7 and 6 a week. But I went there in the November, which was my birthday. I was forced back by the school authorities to go back to school for those following weeks. And that was a bit grim, because I could have lost the job. Anyway, I took this job, but 7 and 6 a week. My mother had 7 and 6 a week through the government. That's the reason I think they put me down to 7 and 6. They said, you will learn in a few years. And I was learning a bit, because they had these big ledgers with the things, and I was doing the totting up and all that. And looking back, that taught me to be good at figures. I'm getting a bit slower now, but I'm pretty good at figures through that.
What sort of a company was it?
It was a Wiltshire agricultural company, of which they had, the bills were going out to the various places. Then they were split up in columns, you know. Anyway, you don't want to know all that.
No. So how long did you stay there?
Well, I got fed up after 2 years of that money, taking that money home. So I walked out and went to the local foundry and see if there's a job. They gave me a job then, clerking in a big foundry. And it's very interesting. All the heavy cranes go up on. And I had the job doing the piecework, pricing it, you know, going around to getting how many hours do you work on this job, how many hours do you work on the other job. And that was interesting in a way. And I was a bit of a scrounge, it was really. And I got fed up, so I thought, I knew I was going to join the army.
Really?
Back of my mind. You see, when I was brought up, my father being killed and nobody spoke about it, my uncle was also in the same regiment. He won the MM in 1980. So I saw him occasionally. So obviously I looked up to him, and it was built in, really, that I must go in there. But my brother'd already joined the army at this time, the Wiltshires.
Yeah.
So I thought, that's what I'll do. But when I joined, I thought, well, it's going to be pretty hard work, you know. But I was so surprised when I arrived there, in my 10 weeks waiting for others to join to make a platoon for training, I was found that I was all right.
Right. So when you decided to join up, did you go to a recruiting office? Or?
I went straight to the regimental depot.
Right. In where was that?
In Devizes. Mm-hmm. Because I knew all the sis, I knew it all, because...
And what was their welcome like? What did they say to you? Well, a young lad arrived.
Let me see. No, I was at... I'm sorry, we've beat the gun there, because I was in the TA before that.
Right, yes.
Well, I was still working during the period of the last period. I was working in the TA.
Right. And how many times a week did you go to the TA?
Usually twice a week, and I had two camps, two summer camps.
Yes.
From there, I knew then what to do when I joined the army. Mm. Now, I learnt then that when I joined the army, it would not become a CV or an RC, because I knew that they had Sunday church parades. So when I joined, I was said I was a Wesleyan. So when I joined that, I was in a small group of three or four, which is much easier on a Sunday.
So you went to the HQ at Devizes.
Yes.
And you signed on, did you?
Yes. It was easy because they had my background from the TA.
And so where did you report to when you physically joined? Yeah, that was at Devizes.
At Devizes, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the accommodation like? What sort of barracks were they? Were they wooden or...?
No, they were well-built. No, Le Marchant barracks, mm-hmm. named after the general, the Le Marchant, something to do with them. They were well-built, solid. The only things wrong with anything there, I could see, was a bath once a week, which is not very good, and food tolerable, except that 11 o'clock, we're all doing a lot of physical things, so we're all really tired and we needed this break, which normally later on I didn't need an 11 o'clock break. But then we had a break with cocoa, mm-hmm. which looked like coffee. It was not mixed up properly with milk, or you could see the grains floating on it, and a hard biscuit. Now, those hard biscuits, I look back now, I've seen them in the museum where they were used in 1918. The same biscuits type were so hard, they should have been mashed up. Well, later on, when food was a bit short, they did mash them up, soaked them, mashed them up, and made puddings. So you can imagine what they were like.
So you joined up, and yeah. You said you had to wait for some others to turn up.
Yes, well, in those days, they had to get a platoon sufficient numbers to train. So it was a bit of a job, easy job, because those who were there in this barrack room, all very, for different places. There were a couple from the, been in prison, but in those days, you see, the magistrate would say 14 days to join the army. That was the idea. But the people who came in, they were of such quality that we were all friends in such a short, the same day, we were all friends, and nobody would ever dream of taking anything from anyone else. Never, never dream of it. Yeah. Throughout life, it was the same. Well, not always, but then it was good.
Yeah. What were the NCOs like? Because they were the ones who were to lick you into shape.
Yes, well, now they were sergeants, had knowledge of the Great War, and they were treated us like they were fathers to us, in a way. Looking back, when I see people and I see the television, I get so annoyed when we were treated so well. They, as I said, treated us like fathers. And they brought us up, respect in both ways. Both sides respect.
Do you remember any of the sergeants' names from those early days?
Well, I'd give you the wrong name, buddy.
Yeah.
one of them was in trouble, so I'd better not. No, I'm sorry, I don't.
No, that's all right. And the corporals, I suppose, they were right.
I can't remember any corporal training us in those days.
Right. Oh, it would always be a sergeant.
Oh, yes. Right. Even in my time, I did training. We didn't have corporals. We were sergeants training.
So what was your daily routine like then in those, once they started the training?
Up early. PT. But you see, we were very fortunate. Amongst our group, I had one who came from the Duke of York School, was a great friend of mine, and he'd been through it all in the Duke of York's Army Training School. I mean, they were physically better off. But, I mean, they knew how to play cricket, football, running. So he was a friend of mine, and between us, he helped me along in a way, I think, through life, because I'd picked up early things. When you're young, you pick things up by imitation, don't you, in a way, without knowing it.
And he was a good friend. Do you remember his name?
Yes. He became a lieutenant colonel later on during the war. Milner. Fred Miller. Fred Milner.
Milner.
Yes. Yes, he went on to overseas. He became a lieutenant colonel. We had a few of my area group was commissioned.
Right.
Oh, there's a very nice great friend of mine there. Finlay was in my platoon. Later on, I met him in Sicily. He was an officer passing by in an armoured car.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's jumping the gun, isn't it?
Yeah. So, PT, that would be a big feature, would it?
Well, I was all right on that because, as I told you, I was running every day back to lunch, back again. That's 5 miles lunchtime. Because in those days, no cars or anything like that to take. We didn't want it, did we? We were better off. So really, I started off better off than most people, physically, for running. So I could... And it helped a lot.
And you did lots of drill, I imagine, did you?
Yes, but it was all good. I mean, I think of it. No, there's no problem.
Right.
There was nothing we couldn't do. I mean, it was all done so well gradually.
Mm.
I'm looking back now and giving you that idea as I think of it.
They must have been quite busy days. I mean, you must have been quite tired by the end of the day. I mean, they kept you on the go.
Yes, and really, looking back, we had to buy our cleaning kit, toothbrush, toothpaste, brass and shoe stuff, and we had very little money. So that made me think, well, I must do something about this. I mean, we had 2 shillings a day, of which I sent money home to my mother, because she was a widow. My brother did the same. So that's 1 and 6 a day, of which at least 8 pence went on feeding yourself extra in the naffy, and buying these little bits and pieces.
Yes, yeah. And what about weapons? What weapons did you learn on basic training?
Well, it was the Shortley Enfield. Wonderful rifle, Shortley Enfield. I'll tell you a story of Sicily about that in a minute. And the Lewis gun. That was a shocker. The Lewis gun, they had 22 stoppages. We later used that in Palestine, and the dust and sand got in the magazine. So really, it was only suitable, I know now from experience, for anti-aircraft or on vehicles or on the sea, away from sand. But we used to learn all those stoppages, you know, 22, from the machine, with this sergeant instructing us, and he'd call out stoppage number 3, And we knew to go through their 17, we had it all pit and pat. We were taught pipe fashion. But looking back, that was the way to do it. I still think it is in a way, because once you do that, you know it. You can't forget it. To try and... I see people learning things now, and it's not... in the army, they can't learn it as well as I think we learned it by using it. I call it pirate fashion.
Yeah. So there were 22 different reasons why a Lewis gun might jam.
Yes.
Good heavens.
Yeah. Separate... Oh, there's a lot. And we had to know them all and strip them and do it quickly. I tell you the truth, we couldn't do them all. We did about 19, 20. Because when you're in learning, you've got the squad all around you, others learning, it puts you off a bit. If you were on your own in a place, you could probably think and get through to the 22. But I reckon if we could get through 17 or 18, we'd be lucky. A lot of people couldn't.
What sort of a shot were you? Were you a good shot?
Well, you know, I thought I wasn't. I became a marksman and all that sort of thing, but in those days, we had friends which helped you out on the firing range, you know. There were some funny stories about them.
What was it like on the firing range then?
Cold, windy. Oh, there's some photographs of them on the firing range. A bit of a strain. You had to pass your test to get threepence a day extra. But because it was money involved in it, all the instructors, they would help you in a way. I mean, those in the butts would do the marking. We would take it in turn. We would be shooting. Then we would change over. We would go in the butts. So those who were then shooting were our friends. So occasionally you could put the odd hole in the right place, you know, for them. Well, it was money involved. And we were very good at teamwork. It was all teams and friends. So looking back, good. Well, it was good times.
Were you allowed out of the camp at all in the evenings?
Not early on. We were allowed after about the first few weeks. That meant we were up to the standards, we go out dressed, but it was all uniform, go out in uniform in those days, being recruits. So I could go home, had a bicycle, cycle off from Devizes to Whitley, where we had our house. Our house was the only one in that area which didn't belong to the squire. And he used to come round with his horse and cart, the trap I meant, looking at our house, because the only one in three villages which he owned. And we were very pleased about that. But he was very good. Every Christmas he used to put two pheasants outside of each house. Now my mother was so proud that she said it can't belong to us. So I remember taking those two pheasants next door. They had four. We would have liked those, I think.
Yeah, life must have been really tough compared to what we expect today.
Well, funny you should say that. There was no water, no electricity, and I used to collect the water from the village pump, which was 400 yards, I suppose, a bit more, with one of those huds on the shoulder and two buckets. Now, that's drinking water, because you couldn't carry all day long your washing water and all that. I mean, you'd be going all day long. So we had a water butt outside. Now, that water, rainwater, that was wonderful stuff. It kept your skin soft. It was good to bath in. Well, we had a tub when we were young in the fire, because we had no bathroom. Well, inside toilet. And to empty the inside toilet, one would go on watch at the roadway, you see. All right. And we'd dash out and put it into the hole we'd already dug, covered it over, and that was done for the next fortnight.
So coming into an army barracks seemed quite comfortable, I suppose, in some ways, did it?
Well, my place was comfortable. My home was comfortable.
Yes.
Oh, no. My mother looked after us.
Yeah.
Our own house.
Yeah.
And looking back, we were fortunate. Mm. But into the barracks, that was all right, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing is some people found it different. I didn't, because but some people found it very lonely in the early weeks.
Did they? Mm. Why was that? They're missing home? Or?
Well, different people have different approaches. Like, I'm an individualist. Mm. I'm happy here on my own. Mm. And I was happy there on my own. But I had friends like one or two who we spent a lot of time together, you know, sport. And even when we were allowed to go out, we'd go out together. We're talking about the early days now, aren't we? Mm.
That's right. And you had a naffy there, did you?
We had a naffy, yes. And they were all very good behind, but the tea and the usual thing, it wasn't... Wherever you go, somebody wants to make money, so that with the tea, it all became very thin, not very... No naffy or no... Any canteen who had people helping there, they would try to make money out of it. So the only way we did things later was do it all ourselves.
Right. How long was your basic training?
When this particular, because it took a long time to get them together, it was about 12, 14 weeks, but it should be normally about 10, 6 to 10.
Yeah.
But ours was much longer because we were waiting to get them together, a squad. Because the early recruiting, so the 1930s, when they were coming from all over the country, we had some from Birmingham, London, and they followed through in the, all the way through, some from Ireland. Very good when I look back. Yeah. The combination.
Real mixtures.
Yes. Yeah. And I suppose we learnt from each other. Because they shouldn't have really been joining, because it was, had it not been for the slump. They were miners. Oh, they were very clued up, some people. Yeah. Others.
And at the end of basic training, where did you go then?
Oh, straight to the battalion, which was in Aldershot.
Right, and this is 2nd Battalion, was it?
Yes.
So a bit of a change there.
Yes, they gave me a recommendation when I got there. I read it, and it said, CO's recommended for CO's driver. Well, I wasn't, hadn't been... I hadn't learned to drive yet. So I think they weighed people up and say what you could do. But that's how good they were. This is a sergeant, so we're recommending you when you go to the battalion. I was looking back. They were very good, that, wasn't it? They could see I could learn and could do it.
And you were the right type.
Yes. Yeah. Now, that's very sensible, wasn't they? I'm just giving you an idea of how good those people were.
So you arrived at Aldershot, so rather a different sort of a place your platoon must have felt. The new boys?
Yes, let me see. Well, you see, I already was... I could run. I could do a bit of running. So I was in the team straight away. So once I was in the battalion running team, which was almost straight away, we had battalion runs once a week. So from there, I was in early on, quite well up. So that made my entry into the battalion easy.
Were you proud to be in a battalion, to have your own battalion now, as it were? Did that mean a lot?
Well, because now I knew a bit... Yes, of course. My uncle I knew about. I didn't know much about my father, as I've said. But because my uncle was in that battalion, he used to tell me of stories when he was also in that same barracks. He was a PT instructor. And on the top railings, they were four or six flights up. He was well known for doing a handstand on the top railing. You see? So when I got there, I could see. That gave me an idea. I was home, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. So a family feel to it, really.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So how did your training go on at Aldershot? Did they start teaching you new weapons?
No, same weapon. No, it was very good when I look back. A lot of hard marches and all that. Long marches. And I used to be put in the first scout. Now, in a platoon, we had sections, as you know. And I was put the scout in the section. Because I was fit, I would go in front. And the corporal had a map, was guiding us, say, this way. So he'd send me up one road, and after 5 minutes, after going up there a quarter of a mile, he said, blow the whistle, I had to come back and go up the other. And I thought, well, if I'd gone like this, I'd be fitter still, wouldn't I? But it was all good fun if the mistakes were made. Mm. Everybody looked after each other in those days.
Did you see yourself as staying with the 2nd Battalion and staying in Aldershot, or did you imagine you'd see...
No, I wouldn't ever have joined if I thought that. No, I knew where they were, in India mostly. But I knew I would be going, I'd be off anywhere. I would never have stayed in Aldershot. I would have left the army. I'd have to buy myself out in those days.
So how long were you at Aldershot?
No, 1936, we went to Palestine. We had to go to Palestine.
Right.
There was a problem there. So we went to Palestine and...
What were the preparations like for your moving to Palestine? Were you issued with tropical kit or...?
Well, we were on training at a place called... in Norfolk, somewhere, on somebody's estate. And we had to come back quickly to Aldershot and pack. And away we went. With tropical kit, yes, khaki, and a pit helmet. And we arrived in Palestine. We did quite a bit of soldiering in the hills with a friend of mine, and he's still alive. George Warner was our lieutenant then.
Right. So how did you get to Palestine?
By sea, yes. Well, I remember, it was the Neuralia. It took us 10 days. We were in hammocks. But before we moved off, we had to be inoculated and vaccinated. It was rather unfortunate that we had a vaccination in one arm and two inoculations. Now, looking back, I think, I pity the man who had fair hair, because they were affected more by this. And very quickly. So I thought, three inoculations, one fighting against the other. But now I hear they gave them five inoculations. I can see why they've got problems of this disease. But we couldn't get in our hammocks because swollen arms and painful were on the deck. So it wasn't a very comfortable 3 day, 10 day trip. 10 days, I can't believe it.
And where did you land?
Haifa. Then we went straight to Safan, where we had a tented camp. Mm-hmm. Oh, we had some fun there.
Did you? Tell me about that.
Well, your rifle. We had to keep our rifle with us at all times, obviously, because it was a tricky time. The arms were causing a bit of trouble. So we had bell tents, of which we had about 8 or 10 men. Not much room. So one man, if somebody lost his rifle or missed it, we had to turn the whole battalion out searching. So they had an alarm for this. The bugler would sound the alarm. So the alarm was sounded one day, and one said, "I've lost my rifle, you see." So we went on, and after studying, talking about what, he said, "Well, I put it in the corner, hid it in the sand, in the tent, wrapped in a ground sheet, where the sun comes in on that corner, you see." Well, this was 6 o'clock at night, so the sun had gone away. So I said, worked out at 11 o'clock where it was. There, we found his rifle. But it was a bit of a joke at the time.
Yeah. Was there a fear that the Arabs would steal the rifles?
Oh, yes, they would. Other units lost them. One unit, I won't mention the unit, because I wouldn't like to put it on record. They had to have chains put to their arm to anchor their rifle to their wrist.
What work were you actually doing there? What was going on, and what were your duties?
Well, I was in the mortar platoon. Oh, in Aldershot, I was taught.
Oh, right.
Oh, many things wanted in Aldershot. I got a stripe there. It was 10 weeks in training to become a lance corporal. And the George Wooner, I keep mentioning, who's alive today, he just comes from Sandhurst. And he would come on some of the drill parades and so on. So that's why we're very close together, because of the early connection. But to become a lance corporal there, we had to learn a lot. I remember after there was two volumes, manuals, SAT Vol 1 and 2, and you should really know them all. Many, if things had affected you, you would swat up. Pirate fashion again. And to become a lance corporal, we had to teach people how to use the weapons or on drill. And I remember we had to teach them how to fix bayonets and how to pile arms. And it was a complicated thing. But through learning all these things from the book, not from what somebody's telling you, they show you first of all, then at night. I mean, we studied individually, we conscientiously, to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning all the time. I mean, we were swatting up, and we were pretty good, I think.
Stoppages there. Arthur Caney, end of reel 1. Arthur Caney, reel 2. So just looking back at Aldershot then.